You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Star Wars Beyond the Films. This is episode number 3 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, and we are going to continue this time with our 2011 year in review. We've already taken a look at the novels. This time, we're going to take a look at the comics. I am one of your hosts, Nathan P. Butler, and of course, with me, as always, our stalwart co-host, well, stalwart other host. I guess I'm sort of the co-host here. He's the one mixing the things, Mark Herleman. Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Me and the old droid are sitting here just chilling out. Got a dog in the background. If you occasionally hear a whoo sound, the neighbor's dog is going insane and having epilepsy seizures. I don't know what's going on with it, but
they're not whispers of some kind.
Maybe. You know, I went out there and the dog was at least looking like it was howling. I assumed that maybe it was. It could all be a mind trick. You never know.
It could be those. Yes. Nice. It could be those, those little whispers that you hear in the background with the Sith, where in the prequels, anytime Darth Maul's about to do anything, you hear the sha, sha, sha. Which I think actually the same whispers that in, was it Psycho that did the kill, 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 kill?
Yeah.
Or was that, was Halloween, wasn't it?
Halloween,
I don't
know.
I never got past the Nightmare on Elm Street stuff before I gave up on a lot of those until Saw came
that's
around.
That's funny. So. I'm the same way. I've never watched any of those other ones. The only ones I watched was the Freddy ones, and even those, it was like, eh.
I love Saw. I have to say, as a writer, I love Saw, but that's about the only really horror stuff that I've delved into in recent memory. Although I will say, it should make an interesting discussion when we eventually get to the point where we take a look at all these different genres of Star Wars publishing, because now that we have Red Harvest and we have Death Troopers out there, there's that new growing genre of sort of Star Wars horror, for lack of a better term, and certainly it's not necessarily a fitting term, so we can spend some time talking about those. But this time around, what we're trying to do, folks, is continue running down 2011. And in this case, we've already taken a look at the novels, and it seems like our general consensus was that the novels are pretty strong this year. Would you agree on that one?
I would say so. They've been pretty hard and heavy. On the other side, though, on the comic side of things, we did get a few new series this last year. So that was kind of an interesting little thing, and it looks like a trend that is continuing on into the new year. So I'm looking forward to a lot of the new lines coming out. But I think, like, Jedi the Dark Side with Qui-Gon Jinn, where it told the backstory of Xanatos, his apprentice, the Fallen Apprentice. I really was enjoying that. Plus, we had the Tor comic that came out that went along with the game, where we learn about Bastiel Shan's son. That was an interesting little series as well.
This is true. We actually wound up with, if you count, I guess there's a lot of ways that you could break down the comics here. The way that we went through and broke it down, whenever I was trying to figure out exactly what all the things were released this year, was into completed series or completed storylines. So we're talking things that either existed just this year or were completed from a previous year. We also then have the new series or the new storylines that are still ongoing. We have the digest comics, which of course are just one-shot stories that don't necessarily continue on in any form, with really the only exception being Strange Allies. We have a mini-series that started this year and then ended, so we're not talking part of a broader story, but just a short little quick self-contained tale. And then, of course, we had the omnibus editions continuing this year, or the omnibuy, or omnibuses, or whatever. I always have trouble figuring out what the plural of that should be. I'm told omnibuy and omnibuses are both correct. I prefer omnibuses and something ridiculous every time.
That's what I heard, too, that both were correct. I heard omnibuses was the correct one, but then later they went and said, well, you can even say omnibuy. And everybody then could stop their little arguing over which was right. Is the toilet paper go over or under? I just can't remember.
Look, for me, they don't go anywhere on the little spool because the cats will unroll it either way. I was one of those guys who was unfortunate enough to take Latin in high school. I took Russian in college, which is a lot more interesting. So to me, anytime I see the U.S., I want to add an I to the end of it as the plural. So you already mentioned here Jedi the Dark Side and The Old Republic, The Lost Sons. Our completed storylines this year included the end of Knight Errant Aflame, the first storyline of that series, which of course tied in heading into the Knight Errant novel that we've already talked about, Knight Errant Deluge, which actually just completed in December. That's a second storyline and the first of the comic storyline to continue after the Knight Errant novel. We had Legacy War, which in and of itself ended, but it of course was an end cap to the Legacy series that had previously ended. Then we had Invasion Revelations finally wrap up, the third story arc of Invasion. Jedi the Dark Side, originally announced as an individual series, only to turn out that now it's going to be part of a broader series following Qui-Gon. And then The Old Republic, The Lost Sons, as I mentioned, which is the third storyline in the Old Republic tie-in comic, the first of those not to be released as a web comic first. I guess let's go with Knight Errant first here. With regard to Knight Errant, especially with us also having the novel this year, what did you think? Is Knight Errant with A Flame and Deluge, is it on the right track? Is it going where we'd like it to go? How is that turning out so far?
I want to say it's on the right track. It's definitely going where I personally would like it to go. When A Flame came out, I think my biggest complaint was the art. Mainly for me, like I said on EUcast, I'm a nose guy. So Kara Holt's nose kept changing, and it was like getting bigger and bigger. And they'd have her on the cover, and she had this tiny little petite nose, and you go inside, and her nose was big again. It was like, what's going on? I was getting hung up on that in the first few issues. I wasn't alone, so I know that it wasn't just a foible of my own. But I like where the story's going. In our first episode, or maybe it was our second episode, we had mentioned the dynamic of the Sith that we discover in the book. And I like how A Flame, when it starts out, you know, we just really get the idea of the brothers, Odin and Daemon, and the way that they're kind of going back and forth. But come the book, we learn that there's a bigger family involved. And then in Deluge, in fact, the latest episode, we start to see the family come back together to make some decisions and stuff regarding a certain hut in the plot. But I really like how the book set up a whole new side to the story of the comic. Because I look at, you know, A Flame as one arc, A Deluge as the second arc, and even though Knight Errant, the book, falls between the two like its own arc, it definitely affects Deluge, and yet Deluge still follows A Flame pretty well. I mean, you don't have to read the book to know what's going on, but you definitely will have an idea of who these characters that just kind of showed up are. Without reading that book, you might be scratching your head going, who in the heck is in that hologram? That kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's one of those things where it does make you want to go out and grab the book to kind of fill in the gaps, but you don't need to. And I like that fact, the way it works. Deluge, I think that the direction they've gone with Deluge is better than where they were going with A Flame. A Flame almost had a Empire Strikes Back kind of hopeless feel to it, which I like, but Deluge, on the other hand, kind of takes that and rolls with it, where Kara's now got a group that's helping her. She gets a starfighter. We're watching her reaction to the fact that the hut has kind of pumped the people in the Sith world full of the Deluge drug that kind of makes them not care about anything. I think Legacy was really the first one that kind of really jumped into the whole aspect of having characters that were drug addicts. So, you know, for me, as someone who has recovered with addictions in my past, I like seeing that kind of thing show up. I mean, you know, some people get really irritated. Well, they feel like they're beating you over the head with it. But, you know, like I said, as someone who struggled with an addiction, it's not something you just get over with. And so I like the fact that the writers acknowledge that and they kind of write it in there. To me, I thought they did a very good job in Legacy, and I like what they're doing with Deluge in that aspect. I mean, it's not something that they're going way too overboard. And with Deluge, it's different in the aspect of the main hero isn't on it, but she is seeing the ramifications of what's going on with society around her as they're all on it, and she's trying to bring them, snap them out of it. So I'm definitely looking forward to where we're going here in Deluge. They feel like kind of, like little one-and-done kind of stories in a sense, even though they are building off of each other. But they do feel kind of like you could just grab this one, and it's like a filler episode. It kind of reminds me of Deep Space Nine in that aspect. The first two seasons kind of seemed really slow, but they were crucial for the last three seasons to really rock. And so, you know, when I think about KOTOR and what John Jackson Miller did with that, and I'm looking forward to where this goes. Plus, you know, the whole Tor aspect, that whole era is just kind of growing and expanding and becoming like almost three or four mini eras. So I'm really looking forward to how this is all fleshing out.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think that Knight Errant, first off, the art did put me off at the beginning. It can't seem to find a stable art style. I think some of the art in the middle of Deluge was actually pretty good, and I was thinking, yes, they finally found it, but then it becomes much more looser and cartoony by the end of it. So I'm still hoping that they find that sweet spot when it comes to the way they're going to present things for Knight Errant. I didn't like the Kara character in the novel very much, but I liked the revelations of the novel. I like the character in the comics better, but they haven't been playing up the revelations quite as much. But I think you're right. I think this is a series that, knowing the track record that John Jackson Miller has of doing some really good things with Knights of the Old Republic and Lost Tribe of the Sith, I expect him to do really good things with Knight Errant, too. But these really are the very first baby steps of that particular story. And in this case, you could compare that, as we will in a moment, to the stuff in Invasion. I was not big on Invasion, but said, you know, let's stick out the first couple of arcs and see where they go. And sure enough, the third one ups the ante. So I'm curious where Knight Errant is going to go after this as far as upping the ante goes. And that's not to say that these stories in and of itself, A Flame and Deluge, don't have their great moments. Especially Deluge, you know, we've got Starfighter combat in there all of a sudden. We do have new characters entered into the mix, and it changes the situation by the end, at least a little bit, for Kara. And you top that off with, honestly, something I don't think anybody ever wanted to see so much as, I mean, not that it was bad to see, but something that we probably wouldn't even have thought to see. And that is, we get, in the pages of Knight Errant from 2011, a brief battle, brief but cool, between a Jedi and a Hutt who is essentially using Jedi-style skills or Sith-style skills in terms of fighting. You might say, well, how on earth does a Hutt fight, in this case, a human Jedi? Simple. Get rid of the gravity. As soon as you do that, all of a sudden it becomes a very different type of fight. I never would have expected to see that in a Star Wars comic, but what they did with Zodo and Kara in Deluge turns out really well. So it's got a solid foundation, but I'm not really sure. I'm not sure how long it'll take to get to the point where I just say, wow, when I look at Knight Errant, but it certainly has the potential to go there.
Zodo, real fast. When I saw him in Deluge, I can't think of the character's name, but in Dune, the Baron from the Harkonnen, the one that floated around in the old classic version of Dune, I just totally thought of that guy. I was like, dude, that's awesome! I like Hutts, and yet I hate Hutts. And so I find I really like the Hutts in the past. We had Bail Dorum, now we got this one. But I really like the way that the styling was done, how he's got like the robotic type arms to make his arms even bigger. It's like, what are you trying to compensate for there, Zoda? You know? But you mentioned something about Kara, about how you didn't really care for her in the book. And I think that hits the nail on the head with the hammer really hard for me. In the aspect of, I find her kind of grating at times, but I accept that that's where the character is in her life. You know, I look back to the little prequel story that led in and everything, and we saw where her position was in the grand scheme of things within the Jedi Order. And, you know, the beginning of A Flame, we watch everything fall apart. Vanatrice dies. Kara's left with everything. And she's in a hopeless situation. And I think that is where I find my irritation is I see her reacting to the hopelessness. And I see it more coming out in her character than in her thoughts. It's more like what she's doing is irritating me. But I think she's doing it mainly because that's her way of adapting, I think. You know, at least that's how it's coming across to me. And then it seems like, you know, she adapts and moves on. And I have a feeling come about the fourth or fifth arc, the parts about her character in that regard that annoy me aren't going to so much that they're finally going to move past that.
Yeah, I would hope that if someday they decide to do another Knight Errant novel to interweave with the comic series, that the way that we get into her head in that novel is substantially different than where she was in the first one, you know, given the fact that it was at the beginning of that particular struggle. Now, one thing that I mentioned there was we've got these two story arcs. Where is the next one going to go? One series that we have seen that happen, as I mentioned, was Invasion. Invasion started out with refugees, moved on into rescues. We're following the Galfridian family as their world essentially comes undone with the Yuuzhan Vong invasion happening. And we learn that there is a secret to the identity of Nina Galfridian, the mother, in the end of Rescues. And now we see how that grows and transforms, and we learn there's something up with Finn because he can sense Yuuzhan Vong and has something that's causing his chest pains and such.
And that was that one episode where you saw his chest literally come up. I mean, there's something in there moving around. It's like, whoa, that is not Jason Solo and the little slave, little sleeve thingy mabobber.
Yeah, it's like a guy with a trill from Star Trek, except he decided to sew it closed thinking, what's the worst that can happen? But the idea being that they laid the foundation there in those first two, which weren't nearly as strong as the third, and then we got Revelations, the third story arc, which just concluded, that kicks things up a notch. It stays further away from the pre-established characters, except for Borsk Velia, focuses much more on Nina, Kay, and Finn, where they go with their separate storylines. Nina and Kay together aboard the Heart of Artorias, a stolen Yuuzhan Vong vessel, or captured Yuuzhan Vong vessel. And then you have Finn on Coruscant with Dre, this person who supposedly is this Jedi master who has seen what's coming and wants to work with Finn to stop the Yuuzhan Vong and everything. And I got to tell you, when I went back to reread the entire thing to put it on the Star Wars Timeline Gold, the story really kind of blew by this time. Instead of feeling like it was episode or issue to issue or episode to episode, it just went zip straight through. I find myself still not particularly thinking that the artwork works. I think it fits this era to a degree, but I think when you have a human character, even though it works for the Vong, the humans all look like they got the crap beat out of them constantly on these like lumpy faces and such. But I think that overall, art aside, the storytelling here is getting stronger. We're finally getting things that lead us to a promising future. I'm still a little bit worried about when they're going to intersect any events from the New Jedi Order novels and making sure that it doesn't contradict anything or clash with anything. But I really liked Revelations, and I think that Invasion has just gone up a notch, at least in my estimation. If it stays at this level, I think this is going to turn out to be a really good series.
Yeah, you know, and I'm right there with you. I get what you mean about the lumpy faces. But I like the art. I'm really finding, I think for me, I had a lot, I don't know, I want to say I had a lot hanging on this series for me. New Jedi Order has been my favorite era, my favorite story arc. The whole time frame has been something I've really enjoyed. So when the series kind of started and they brought in Anakin and Jason and Jaina Solo, Luke and all that, I was like, okay, where are they going with this? Where's the time frame? You know, they didn't have the time frame down at first. I think it wasn't until almost Rescues that we found out. No, it was in Revelations we finally found out that it's been 2 months have passed. And yet, when I was reading it, I felt like we were closer to like 6 months, almost a year in by the time we got to Revelations. Like, it felt like that Finn's time on Yavin 4 was like a montage kind of thing. And that made sense to me. And then they threw in it's only been 2 months. And then I was kind of like, okay.
Well, hey, remember, Luke only has, a few days on the Empire Strikes Back now, the way that things have been figured out most recently, isn't that what it is? They started out saying, you know, well, we can't really tell, it's an indeterminate time, and then it's been sort of changed into a matter of days, and a matter of, it kind of goes back and forth, so apparently Jedi time can go really, really quickly.
Or maybe they got like a Star Trek thing where they like go into a cave and time stops, and they spend 12 years in the cave, but they were only in there for 5 seconds. I don't know, but I kept, you know, the more I think about that, it's like, okay, I'm wondering where they're going to go with this, because there's a lot of things that, you know, in the New Jedi Order had down the road that this comic is just jumping right into, you know, the Heart of Artorias. Like you said, well, Jaina ends up stealing a ship and has her own little Vong ship, and now we've got this one. And, you know, so it's like, I kind of wonder, you know, is the comic going to start to press on some events by doing that? We've got, in the Revelations, we have the, I want to say it's a Bothan reporter, but it's probably not. She's got some funky look to her. She looks kind of almost Cathar-like. But, I keep looking at that character and the fact that it's, you know, she is reporting the events, what's going on live on the HoloNet. And I'm thinking, but nobody knows what's going on yet, aside from a very small cabal. But on the other hand, the fact that Boris Fele's arc is there and we see what's going on with Finn and what Dre's got Finn doing, that side makes things that happen in the books make sense. You've got him showing up, claiming to be a Jedi, but it's looking like he's trying to assassinate Borisk, at least to Borisk, which makes sense even more so why Borisk in the books would try even harder to not help the Jedi. And so I found that was kind of an ironic little twist there, you know. And then when we find out recently in Revelations that Dre has his own agendas and that he's using Finn, I am very interested to see what's going on with Dre. And of course, the EU fanatic in me is going, Dre? Like Lucien Dre from KOTOR? You know, so I don't know if there's an actual connection there, but you know me, I'm going to go there. I'm going to want it to be unless they tell me flat out no. I want to find a way because, I don't know, everybody's going to Yavin 4. Everybody's going to Tatooine. Why can't everybody be related? I don't know.
I guess. That was actually my first thought was, you know, when I saw Dre, granted it has one less A in it, but you had to wonder if there was a purposeful connection there. But then I remember all the times that my students, when I'm talking about in world history where we start talking about the Protestant Reformation, and I bring up Martin Luther, and everybody to a person just about goes, King? And I'm like, no. No, there were more people. Well, were they related? Okay, Luther's the last name. King is the last name. You know, of course, there is a connection between the two when Michael King, Martin Luther King Jr.'s father, changed his name legally and became Martin Luther King in honor of Martin Luther. Of course, there's that connection, but it's not Martin Luther from then. They must be related. Wow. No.
Do you think there's real truth there that Dre is an actual Jedi, or do you think he's just completely blowing smoke?
You know, I don't know. It'd be interesting when or if Dre finally comes face to face with Luke, and whether or not there is any recognition there whatsoever, because he could just be absolutely crackpotty for all that we know.
Yeah.
You know, he sort of appears as this vagrant, and then he shows up again later. But then again, so does Vima Deboda. You know, Vima Deboda shows up as a vagrant in Dark Empire, and she recently showed up in, gosh, I can't even remember what book it was. I just summarized it a while back for the Star Wars Timeline Goal, but it's escaping me right now. But she shows up again later on. So it's interesting the way that they can present these Jedi, if they are Jedi, in unusual positions where they are not really taken for who they could be. Kind of like, you know, judge me by my size, do you? Well, judge me by looking like a hobo, do you? You know? and they were trained almost now to think of those characters as wise characters where we should look beyond the surface. Well, maybe this is one of those times where they're purposely pulling the rug out from under us, and they're saying, unlearn what you have learned. We've taught you for so long that it's not what's on the surface that counts, that they're not really scruffy nerf herders. These people really are wise Jedi Masters. Maybe this guy really is a scruffy nerf herder who's out of his mind. So it'll be interesting to see how they play that out.
You know, the other thing that the whole Dre connection makes me think of, and I know with it being 2 months at this point, it's still early, but I expect if they don't end the series, the comic series, before the book series ends, or you know, depending on how far they go into it, I expect to see Verger, however you want to say it, some point, I expect to see her. At the least, I think I would like to almost see her being interested in Finn, more so than the other way around. I think in the regards of what's going on with Finn's stepmother and what's going on in his body with the Yuuzhan Vong and the connection between the Shaper and everything, I would say that she's got to know something about him. She knew a lot about a lot of things going into that series. So I would not be surprised down the road if we see her pop up in this comic book.
Personally, I'd like to see that to a degree. Having the last time that we saw Verger was in Star Trek: The Motion Picture. The last time we saw Verger, as I recall, was in the backstory of Darth Krayt, Asherad Het, in the pages of Legacy. And we know that she had Asherad Het for a little while, and then he was gone, and he founds the One Sith. I would actually like to see something where, if Verger does reemerge, somehow that ties into maybe pushing Finn into the background of galactic events and joining the One Sith. It'd be nice to have a story, a change of pace, to have a story where at least for a while one of our heroes goes dark and stays dark. That it's not a question of redemption so much as a question, in this case, maybe of we think Finn is the main character. We're spending so much time with Kay and Nina that maybe he goes dark and they become the ones who have to redeem him.
I don't see it happening.
I would love to see something like that. I think there'd be a lot of depth to it, but I can't imagine that they're actually going that direction. But, I mean, there's a lot of potential with these characters, especially when you've created these characters who are in a familiar landscape but are all original new characters. They don't have a predetermined path that they're expected to take. It's not like writing a book about, well, let's put it, it's not like where, for example, you take Shadow Games and you take Death Troopers and such, and it's like, to add credibility to your Star Wars novel that's using original characters, we got to throw in Han and Chewie for some freaking reason. Because they're the ones that legitimate. See, it really is Star Wars, we promise. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. This is a series that doesn't try to do that, let's just throw in all these cameos. They did it a little bit at the beginning, but not so much in the last couple of arcs, but particularly this one. And now we've got essentially an original group of characters that are strong enough to hold their own against some of the other characters around them, which means we've got a lot of storytelling potential without a lot of closed doors at this point. Hopefully they'll make good use of that.
It just blew my mind with that potential of Finn going dark, because Kay actually just got a lightsaber. And, I mean, they're doing things with her, too. And I was kind of beginning to go, why are they messing with her? But, you know, you just painted a really provocative picture there. I could totally see it to a degree. Granted, I agree with you. I doubt they would go there. But I admit, Zek is one of my favorite characters in the aspect of he was a dark Jedi and came over to the light. You know, I really get a kick out of it. And lately, I am enjoying the dark side books, the Sith books, more than any other books. I am really starting to succumb to my inner darkness. And I'm finding that, you know, the same thing, it works for my wife. She loves Mara Jade. Why? Because Mara Jade was bad first. And I don't know. I was thinking the other day about the Book of Sith, and they have a mention that Luke's got a letter in it. And I was just thinking, I'm like, how mind-boggling would it be that the letter was from Luke during his time as Palpatine's apprentice? You know, it's Luke's point of view while he was in the thrall of the dark side. That just, you know, and the whole thing with you just mentioned with Finn is one of those things that just boggles my mind like that. Where it's like, whoa, that would just blow my brains out my eardrum.
That would actually be very cool to see. One of my favorite moments in any Star Wars audio drama, not just the radio dramas, but all the Star Wars audio dramas that they produced, is the moment from Dark Empire where you hear it as audio with Luke shutting down the lightsaber and throwing it down, where you hear it clank and echo, and he bows in front of the Emperor. Yes, my father's destiny is my own. Speaking of destinies, we also saw the end of Legacy in a sense this year with Legacy War. And, of course, we saw the announcement of Knights of the Old Republic War also. With Legacy War, we got an end cap to this. The end of the story, in a sense, of the conflict between Cade Skywalker and Darth Krayt. Now, Legacy is my favorite Star Wars comic series of all time, hands down. So I'll reserve my thoughts on it until we hear yours. What'd you think of War?
Okay, I'm actually right there with you. I really enjoy Legacy. KOTOR was one of those I got into late, and I really enjoyed it. And when it was wrapping up, Legacy was kicking out, and I jumped right on. I want to say when the Obi-Wan backflash story came, the one where Vigar and Krayt came in, that was one where I was just like, okay, this is gold. I was so hooked at that moment. The thing that gets me, though, I have a hard time seeing Legacy War being the end of the series because of, I believe it is issue 41 in the series. I could be wrong. It could be 31. But it was the one with the Mandalorian arcs. Hondo Carr is off and he is going and gunning for the Mandalore, and he is going to be taking his place, or at least that's his goal. And that whole arc is left completely wide open. They didn't wrap it up. Nothing. I mean, nothing. Not even a hint to it. Which tells me that they're going to go back someday. Another thing about it is 3PO. We don't know what happened to 3PO. We know what happened to R2. Now, in Darth Plagueis, there's a certain spoiler that I'm not going to say, but it got me thinking about droids and their bodies. The fact that a droid's body can be basically upgraded. You know, we saw it with C-3PO. He had an older body. We see him get the new body that Anakin builds for him. So, you know, I was thinking about that. Like, you could go either direction with that. You can go in his past and show 3PO as an older body. Or you could go into the future in Legacy, and we could find out that 3PO might have been there the whole time, but has a whole new body. And it's things like that that make me think Legacy could always continue. There's a lot that they still haven't spelled out. A lot of people were like, oh, they've boxed themselves in here. I don't think so. I mean, I was worried about it. There is always a general concern when you write, you know, events down the road. But look at the prequel trilogy versus the original trilogy and the gap in the middle of there, and people still want to know what happened. Even though you know that it's gonna what's going to happen in the OT, that gap, people want it filled in. And I see the same thing with the gap between Legacy of the Force, Fate of the Jedi, and the Legacy series. Because people want to know. You know, they want to know who Ben's going to hook up with. They want to know if Ben's going to have one kid or two. These things have not been given to us. And the fact that they haven't given us something so simple as, yes, Cade is Ben's grandson or great-grandson. The fact that they won't tie that down leads me to think that they've got options on the plate still that they're thinking about. And they switched to that whole arc style in Legacy where we saw War and all that. So to me, I think the Legacy War is just the first step in them moving into the arc direction. I think we will still get Legacy stuff, but I just think we're going to start seeing them in arcs, and they'll probably be more contained arcs. Not like some of the other series that we've seen where it's, you know, well, like Invasion, where it goes from one arc into the other, where you're pretty much guaranteeing that there's going to be another arc. I see Legacy, if it continues being something more like you'll get an arc a year, if that, That's where I kind of see it going. I think that that era has got a lot of potential, even in the terms of doing flashback stories. Kruk, his character, I am dying to see him in the books, but I want to know more about him. I want to know more about his time in the New Jedi Order, and it seems like the comics are the only way we're going to get it. So be it. If that has to be, I want it.
Legacy, like I said, is probably my favorite Star Wars series of all time. Second favorite would be Tales of the Jedi, I would say. At least before it jumped back to the 5000 BBY era. And I would say that with Legacy, I really got into the characters. I like Cade. The constant references of, you know, no one dies for me, never again. Just we take what is given. You know, just the philosophy behind a lot of the things the character does, the way he is driven, really, really captured my attention. And seeing it end really sucked. And they left it with such an open ending that I was very glad when they announced War. And now that War is over with, so much has happened in such a quick time that it feels as though if they are going to stop it here, this is a good stopping point. Granted, I would love to see more, but if they are going to stop it here, I feel fulfilled. And now that we see Ostrander and Dersima jumping away from Legacy and now going into the very distant past, about 25,000 years before the films, plus that, for Dawn of the Jedi, I don't see them going back to Legacy anytime in the near future, and I'm not sure I would want to see Legacy done by a different creative team. I think it is something that Ostrander and Dersima put such a specific spin on that I would not want to necessarily see somebody else coming into. It'd be the same thing as, you know, the people who make the argument, you know, if we see more Star Wars live-action films, I wouldn't necessarily want to see anybody other than George Lucas behind them. Then again, there are those who would say anybody but George behind them. So I guess it just sort of depends on the availability of those two, I would say. Now, we are kind of going along here talking about just the completed series and storylines. You previously mentioned Jedi, The Dark Side, and The Old Republic, The Lost Sons. My quick thoughts on those. Jedi, The Dark Side, interesting story, interesting way to expand upon what was going on with Xanatos, though it did again screw up the Xanatos timeline. He was the second apprentice. No, he was the first apprentice. Now he's the second apprentice again, and here's his age now, and it's just completely jumbling that up. It was a pain in the butt to get that worked out for the Star Wars timeline goal to make any sense whatsoever with this new information. And it was sort of retelling a story we already sort of knew, so it was hard for me to really get into it. I think it's a good story in and of itself, the way that it plays out. I think the ending is somewhat rushed at the end of the last issue, to the point where there's a couple of times where between panels it's hard to tell what's going on. But overall, if this is the start to a new series that's going to focus on Qui-Gon, it really left things in a cool place to launch things off, because Qui-Gon is a character we haven't seen nearly enough of in the pre-Jedi Apprentice era. And then The Old Republic, The Lost Sons, the other one you mentioned there, honestly, I like the idea of continuing the Old Republic stories, because I'm not going to be playing the game. I want to be able to see more stuff tying into it, expanding the EU, tied into the Old Republic, that gives us a sense of that era and what's going on without having to play. But at the same time, The Lost Sons absolutely missed the mark for me. First off, we're going to have the Empire have a massive number of super-duper-super weapons, worse than just about anything we've ever seen, and they're drawing power from a star for it, and it's just like, really? They did this then, so the Death Star is kind of puny, isn't it?
Well, see, I thought that was a great touch, but as you were.
It's a good concept, but it makes the stuff that comes later feel very outdated. I guess it's kind of like the people who say that given how many times the Sith tend to come back and come back and come back in one form or another, they say it undermines the events of the classic trilogy because it's not an end to the Sith. So I guess I'm sort of arguing the same type of thing that those would argue there, which I usually disagree with. But I don't know, The Lost Sons is supposed to be taking place in parallel to the game. It's the first storyline with the game as opposed to Fatal Alliance, which is right before the game. But Theron Shan never got me to like him.
And I had a hard time, whatever.
The Twi'lek's name was, whose name escapes me off the top of my head, Tepeth, I think it was, just never. Number one, she never got me to like her. And number two, I never understood why she talked the way she did, when every other Twi'lek we've ever seen doesn't talk like that. Really, the only one who got me interested at all was Theron's former master when he was being trained to possibly be a Jedi, Nagani Jo. And I don't know, just something about that story did not work for me when I read it as individual issues and when I read the entire thing. It's an interesting introduction to the era in something we haven't seen as webcomics. I'd like to see it continue on from here. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying this series should end, but it really just didn't do it for me.
See, I think the thing I liked about it, you know, people will see the parallels there. I see this Sith Emperor as the ultimate Sith. And we don't see another quote-unquote ultimate Sith until Palpatine. And what I mean by that is he's got these mass super weapons. Well, we find out about him because of the Master. What did you say his name was again, Nathan?
Nagani Joe.
Nagani, yes. So Nagani, when he comes back, he's like all crazy, but he knows that something bad's happening out in space. He's been out there for a long time. And so we discover that they've been creating all these huge super weapons by the likes we've never seen before, unless you've read books and know in the future that Palpatine's going to do the same type of thing. But I thought that that was cool little throwback. Like, obviously, Palpatine was taking things that this old Sith Emperor did, or all the Sith, Bane Sith, you name it, you know, we're getting back to that. Well, obviously, he did it right. He was able to hold, you know, he was the Emperor for hundreds of thousands of years. He had super weapons. You know, he was in control. He had other Darths coming to him. I mean, you know, he had it all on lockdown. And I think that in that regard, Palpatine was kind of going in that, going back to that philosophy of, you know, the super weapons. It obviously was working for their old master. But I think that that also plays into the game, that now we've got all these huge super weapons that are obviously going to be your missions to go and stop. And so, I mean, I get how that can work both ways, I guess. And so for me, I kind of enjoyed it. I'm right there with you, though. The characters really, it was only his master that really I enjoyed. You know, I liked the artwork a lot, though. That was the big thing, was the artwork was really cool. I liked the Dark Council and the evil Darth lady. I can't remember her name at the moment, but I liked
Darth
the
Mekkis.
Way... Yes, Mekkis. And I liked the fact that, yeah, her name sounds mechanical, and then when you looked at her skin, it looked like she had a bunch of mechanical little nano stuff growing out of her face, all Borg-like or something. And I liked that side of things. And I think I'm right there with you that if they don't... They don't find more comics to tell the tour. I want to at least see some tie-in novels or stuff like that, because I'm right there with you. My computer is not going to be able to play the game, so I'm going to miss out on a lot of the stuff unless I'm going to YouTube. YouTube is just not as fun as when you're playing it, you know? And so I just want to see it in a comic, see it in a book, something like that, anything like that.
I hear you. Now, we are really kind of narrowing down our time here, I think, for one particular episode. So let's try to very quickly hit the few that are left at this point. We've hit the big ones, the ongoing series. We had, well, some of the ongoing series. We had new series or new storylines in the form of, and we can hit all three of these at once, Dark Times, sure. Out of the Wilderness, Crimson Empire 3, Empire Lost, and Agent of the Empire, Iron Eclipse. And I have to say, with these three, it kind of feels like bad... okay, good. Because Dark Times, for me, Dark Times has never been able to get me on board. I cannot stand Das Janeer. I can't stand the crew of the Uhimlil, or however you're supposed to pronounce the unpronounceable ship's name. I've never been able to like the characters or get into any of the stories. The fact that Dark Times still exists as a series, I don't want to be cynical, though I often am. I don't want to be cynical, but it makes me wonder if this series was not being written by Randy Stradley as Mick Harrison, who is the head of the Star Wars line, would this series even still exist with all the delays it's had and the lack of the story that can really, and maybe it's just me, reach out and grab a lot of those hardcore Star Wars fans, because this really did not do it for me. Crimson Empire 3, Randy Stradley stepped away from, having been one of the original writers with Mike Richardson. Now Richardson is writing it, and we have yet another group in the New Republic era who is wanting to restart the Empire with the Empire Reborn, Empire This, Empire That, Second Imperium This. We bring back Kirkanos to end his story, but it's years and years after the last time we've seen him, and it seems like it's tying into yet another of those very similar plots, which fit the Bantam era, I suppose. And then we get Agents of the Empire, or Agent of the Empire, Iron Eclipse Part 1. All of my copies so far, by the way, I'm getting my third sent to me. So far, both the previous ones have had pages stuck together from some kind of printing error. But Age of the Empire, it caught my attention because it really does have that feel like James Bond. Even the fact that it begins with the end of a previous mission, you can almost expect at the end of the first mission to hear the da-da, da, and you have some kind of, you know, he walks in and he shoots a blaster at the screen or something like that, where you've got an opening theme with a bunch of Twi'lek dancing girls in profile or something. That really got my attention. I like where it's going. I like the Jahan or John Cross character. I do think it was yet another instance of let's lend our story credibility by dropping Han Solo and Chewbacca into an issue. But beyond that, I'm excited to see where that goes.
I like the way that they tied it in, though. It wasn't like they were just dropped. I mean, I guess technically you could say they were just dropped in there. But I like the fact that they had a past, that there was a reason they actually knew of each other. That was kind of an interesting twist. I'm kind of on the opposite. Like, Dark Times, it's weird, but I'm kind of enjoying it. I see it in a lot of ways, like Deep Space Nine. I like the Kruk arc the most. I keep hoping that we'll get that again. I think that's probably why I'm optimistically hopeful for it. But I do like Daz Janir. I come around on his character. You mentioned the ship's name. And to me, that's what I think. Why make a name so hard no one is going to be able to pronounce it?
I think you pronounce it. You say you and then he, and then you like do the little finger on your lips. So it's like you have a blah blah.
Yeah, I call it that too. You Himmel or something like that. But see, that's the thing is, no one's going to get it right. Everybody's going to start calling it something else, and you're going to have people talking. They're like, "What are you talking about, man? I don't know what are you talking about? You Yahoo? No, you know the Yahoo? No, the Yahoo." To me, it's like it's a ship's name. I mean, granted, yeah, it's the Star Wars universe. There's diverse cultures. They've got their own languages. So apparently some of these ships have to be named so unbelievably difficult that you're not going to be able to say it. We're just going to fly around in the sneeze. The what? The sneeze. How do you say that? Well, it said the sneeze. Is that like S-N-E-E-Z-E? No, it's... I mean, so that part of things kind of throws me off. But I like how in this recent arc, they're now looking for Daz. So I'm liking how the way that that's working out, where they actually seem like there's a point to them being in the story again, where it started to get to the point where you're like, why are we even following these guys anymore? So obviously they're going to try to bring that back together and get Daz onto the ship at some point, but I don't know how that's going to work. I am kind of enjoying the side story that's going on with him and the slaver chick. I guess she's now a slave in a group. And so it's kind of interesting to see her change of point of views, and so he's going to the rescue. I enjoy his droid and the humor he's got there, but for the most part, I'm looking for Kruk to come back. I really want more of that. Now, Empire Lost, that's one that I don't know. Everybody's like, yeah, Empire Lost. I think for me, I was like, yeah, Leia's in it, the Solo twins. And then I was just like, okay, what's so great about this? Then I got to the second one, I was like, Nominor! Woohoo! You know, but beyond that, I'm really at a loss as to why I should care. Agent of the Empire, Iron Eclipse, it's only that first issue. I'm kind of digging where it's going. I like his droid quite a bit. Like you said, the way it ended with his last mission accomplished, it did have that feel. I felt the same way. So I really have nothing more beyond that. I'm looking forward to where it's going.
All right, that leaves us with yet another category here. We have the digests. The Clone Wars Digest had two issues this time around, the Star Crusher Trap and Strange Allies, which included the Oppress Unleashed story from Free Comic Book Day instead of continuing off from it. And Star Wars Adventures had two this time around, Boba Fett and the Ship of Fear, and Chewbacca and the Slavers of the Shadowlands. Honestly, I don't have a whole lot to say about these. They're just kind of there. They don't tend to affect anything beyond themselves, except, I guess, Strange Allies technically affects Secret Missions, but we still don't have another book in that series in recent memory except for the one this year. To me, the digests are just kind of a wash, an expensive wash.
That's been my take on it when it comes to collecting. The digests were always the last ones for me. I'm finally getting to the point where I'm starting to get them. I've got the Boba Fett and the Ship of Fear. It was okay. I really want Strange Allies because I like the whole Naru and his clones and what's going on in that story arc, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, the rest, I haven't got there yet, so my interest isn't peaked yet. I don't think much is hinging whether or not you missed the story or not. It's not the end of your EU.
Speaking of those stories that are sort of hit or miss that don't affect much of anything, we did have one individual miniseries that both began and ended this year. That was Darth Vader and the Lost Command, or which can be summed up as, Lord Vader, I need you to go hunt down and save Grand Moff Tarkin's previously non-existent son from peril on a planet we don't care about. Really missed the mark for me. Hayden Blackman, I love a lot of the stuff that he does, especially The Force Unleashed, but I didn't feel like I got anything out of this. And I think it's just like with the digest, because it didn't seem to affect anything in the broader scheme of things, it just didn't really do it for me. It's a good Vader story, but not much else.
I find myself now, I'm more of the opinion of leave Vader alone. Leave Vader alone until George is done. Because, I don't know, he's supposed to be the big bad. And the more George gives me of Anakin, the less I'm, like, buying how big and bad he is. I don't know, I just... They've yet to sell me on why Vader would even be okay with selling and doing slavery. And yet, we know that he's okay with that, okay with the Empire. So there's that whole side of his big bad that when these kind of comics come out, I'm expecting to see it, and it just doesn't get there. I think the biggest thing there we had was where his suit got all beat up, and he's, like, breathing regular oxygen or something. And you're like, wait a minute, didn't that kill him in Return of the Jedi? You know, that kind of thing, I just found myself kind of wishing that they'd have just left it alone for now. You know, where I think of, like, in the book Dark Lord, that one really hit what it was like to be Vader at that moment. But I don't feel like anybody knows what Vader is in the time frame that we're getting in Darth Vader and the Lost Command. And so for me, it just didn't really, I don't know if I could say it feels right, because I don't necessarily know if that's where George is going to go with Vader anymore.
This is true, and that leaves us with the last category, which is the Omnibus Edition or Omnibuy series there. This year we had A Long Time Ago, Volumes 3 and 4, At War with the Empire, Volumes 1 and 2, and The Complete Saga. Now, in the last couple of regular episodes of the EU Review, I went into detail on each of these. I will say that I did pick up A Long Time Ago 3 and 4 because I like the reprints of the Marvel stuff in that format on better paper with better coloring. At War with the Empire, I didn't pick up, but that's because I already own Rebellion and Empire as single issues. And The Complete Saga, I felt, was a missed opportunity because it does include the adaptations of the prequel trilogy, it includes the adaptations of the classic trilogy, but it only includes the special edition adaptation of A New Hope, not the original Marvel one. And these things have been reprinted so many times that hopefully this is the last time we'll see them reprinted yet again. Beyond that, Omnibus Editions, very cost effective, very affordable, but not a whole lot special to talk about it.
Yeah, they definitely turn your comics into a novel. When you grab one of your omnibuses, it seems to take forever to read it. So that's a trade-off. Like, if you get sick of reading a single and being like, man, I gotta get the next one, you know, you get that and it works out. For me, The Long Time Ago, 3 and 4, I got the first one in the red version of it. I don't know, it was like the premium trade or something like that. I look forward to getting the rest of these someday. I just haven't been able to afford them. I'm right there with you on War with the Empire. I have them all singles, so there's no point going there. There was nothing added to it. The Complete Saga I actually want to get because I haven't got any of those in comic. So I thought that was like a pretty good idea, but I just, again, I haven't got... It's not like they're bringing anything super new that I feel like I need to get it right now, so it's not pressing. It's like on a backlist for me. There's other things I need to get now, so... But I'm right there with you. Omnibuses are a really cool way to go. I get most of my comics in the singles, and I can't wait long enough to even get them in trades. So waiting for it to come in omnibus is a null point for me, for the most part.
All right, folks, so it looks like what we have was definitely a mixed bag here for the year of 2011 in Star Wars comics. I would still say it's kind of a rebuilding year after so many series that ended a couple of years ago. We are really pushing our time here as far as being able to air on Middle Earth Network Radio over at mymiddle-earth.net. So we will call it here and come back next time for the next episode of Star Wars Beyond the Films, because that is when we will be talking about the other oddball items, the ebooks, the video games, other odd items of note like theme park rides, and in the process also let you know what we think of the current state of Star Wars in general. For Star Wars Beyond the Films, I am Nathan Butler.
And I'm Mark Herleman. And remember, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook.
Good night, all. May the Force be with you.
And don't quote us the odds.